No, I check it properly before we start.
Yeah, right. Drink your tea and
relax. Yeah, right. What I don't understand is, Joe, your parents, as far as I can remember from...
I put the light on, see, it's so dark today, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
That's a better light.
Yeah. From Audrey.
Yeah.
They didn't come from this part of the world, did they?
Well, our parents... Well, our mother came from Radnorshire, but the father was already here. His grandfather came here with the steam plough back in the 1800 and something.
Hmm. How do you mean?
The Speddings came from Northumberland, the family name.
Yeah.
What? Our mother was a Thomas, and they came from the Welsh border, she did. Well, in the First World War, she was in service in London, our father, who was a widow, had become widowed, was a chauffeur for the War Department, Lord Forster, they owned all of this estate then. The Forster family were related to the Mitfords and all that sort of people, you know, Bowes Lyons and royalties, if you like. I'm not a royalist, so don't say to me, do you love the Queen or anything, because I might have to answer. I don't hate her, I can't hate anyone, not in that respect. Only I despise them for their bloody attitude to life. I can that, of course. But that's another story. But the Speddings came from Northumberland, but our father and his father, his grandfather, our father's grandfather, came down with a steam plough. I don't know, him and a brother or something. The traction engines were originally the system for ploughing after horses before modern tractors were produced, because steam was produced long before the internal combustion engine. I suppose you know that as well as I do. But they brought those down south as contract hire to the local estates through Hampshire. They worked their way down through with these steam traction engines, where you had a big drum underneath which pulled a wire, which you would position it one side of the field and have pulleys, snatch pulleys the other with anchor points, and you would just move along and the wire would pull the plough and then back again through a series of blocks, swivel blocks. And that's how ploughing was done in the old days. Mind you, it would be at least, a horse doesn't pull many furrows, you know that. A horse can only pull a maximum of two when the soil's light. Basically, only one off them. Remembering the effort that's needed. So, but with the steam plough, you could pull a five furrow or even more at a time, which is quite a width you would do each time, and that's how they did it, on contract hire. But then they stayed here, and our father's father worked on the local estate here as a ploughman as well, with horses as well as with steam, although horses came back in again. And he, unfortunately, was killed by the kick from one of his horses, you know. When a shire horse kicks, not because of a human being, you know, but either one of these fly things, and it would kick for some reason, and he just happened to be doing something, moving a trace or something, it kicked him and it ruptured his spleen. Well, in those days, of course, we didn't have blood transfusion as we know it today, or immediate remedial response to an injury. Also, you know, you either lay there, there's always something or other, and of course you bleed to death very rapidly. I dealt with it during the war. A chap, his spleen, he'd been hit by a Bren gun carrier. And he said to me, am I all right? You're all right, calm down. And I had him in resuscitation. We were just going to operate, but he died before we could, because we'd had to bring him in from the Yorkshire Moors. This was on an exercise up in, I'd been on it a few days before, actually, as a medic. I was a medic, but I was in York Military Hospital. And I'm only telling you a story, but knowing all these things, but that's how my grandfather was killed. But anyway, in London, the First World War, he met our mother, who was a parlour maid, and he was already widowed with three children, young children. His wife had died either at the beginning of the war or before, I don't know. But our mother married him, and there were six other children. But when the war was over, they moved here to Leap, which was the Forster's home. Exbury, not Leap, Exbury House and all this, where Rothschild is, was Forster's. Well, the Forsters lost their two sons and heirs in the First World War, on the Somme or somewhere. And so, to pay off their destitutes, they sold the bulk of the estate to the Rothschilds. to old Lionel, this one's father, who was obviously rich, filthily rich. So that's why the Rothschilds own the estate now, which I believe it's on a, still on a type of lease. I do, because I've had this, I had to deal with them legally sometimes, and on this, I understand it, but they retained about 70 acres here, and our father worked for them till the day he died, which was during this last war. It were 4 days before he died, he got pneumonia, and because during the war you didn't have the same medication as you got. I mean, penicillin or antibiotics today can knock pneumonia, although he was getting quite, he was 75, my age, but he'd become old, you know what I mean? When I say that, he'd had a long, hard life working for the idolatrous rich, you know, although these relics of theirs aren't so idolatrous, although they're still rich, but they're quite easy people to get on with. But he was a chauffeur. I mean, he didn't have to work all those hours, but he could retire, but he was like that, that he worked right up to the day he died, roughly. But driving them around all through the night, and you know what wartime was, don't you, into Southampton, they travelled a lot by train, these people, but they were those sort of people that, were involved in all sorts of things. And I understand the chauffeurs, the one, there were very few people, all young people had gone to the war, hadn't they? So older people had to do these, well, didn't have to, but did these tasks. And so, poor boy, but he got pneumonia and died, you know, 75. I'm sure he didn't have a long life ahead of that, because on leave I'd seen him and I noticed certain things that, you know, that big changes in him in the last, those first couple of years of the war. It was about, I'm sure it was 42 that he died. Sadly my twin brother was terribly wounded at the same time, and I'm sure it was after that, yeah, my brother died there. Oh, no, my brother didn't die there, my father is. My brother didn't die until he was 32, that's my twin brother. But he was terribly wounded, he was left a physical wreck, you know. But he's along, he had about 10 years of good life, yeah.
Where was he wounded, the father?
Oh, at the back of the White, and he was in the Navy on a ship.
Oh.
Yeah, just over there, but, you know, an escort vessel to a convoy coming up channel, and they were attacked, and five direct hits. He was on a 280-foot vessel, so you understand that it was... Fortunately, she was coal-fired, and she didn't sink, you know, with her bunkers and what. She was very badly damaged. They towed her into Portsmouth, but he was in a terrible... He was in hospital a year before he was discharged. And, it left its mark, but he was killed in a silly accident along the road here on a motorbike. But he only had weeks to live, actually. He had he was paralysed one side, and his foot had a spring on, but he had arteriosclerosis at an advanced stage, you know, that... He used to have violent headaches, you know, hardening of the arteries, it's symptomatic of that. But in his condition, where he'd been badly wounded, you know, the death is like car accidents, cause the same kind of thing, you know that, don't you? Severe car accident. Anything, if the body's subjected to anything severe damage, then hardening of the arteries, which smoking or lots of other things can cause, but severe accidents also cause it, can cause it. Leave a legacy, you know, behind.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you were, I know somebody terribly wounded a while ago in a car accident. They thought he'd never make it. He was, he couldn't speak or anything, but he's got his speech back and he's becoming articulate. But the injuries to his body, I mean, he won't live to be old because of that. Now, my brother had thrombosed arm, which is typical of any hardening of the arteries anyway in the venous system. But, even just a few weeks before, he said, it may have only been a couple of weeks, he said to me, he'd been for a medical, a special medical, because he was with these violent headaches and things. And although he was working as a security guard at the refinery here, which was good really, because he had his motorbike to go to work. But he wasn't robust at all, and he'd had pneumonia when he came out. After the hospital, I had to be working in Kent for a while. And I got a call to come home, he was in hospital, he'd got pneumonia, and funnily enough, he was on oxygen, all sorts of things. Well, on the way, I came home, and my brother and I, we've got an elder brother, we got on our bikes, and I took something with me, a catapult. I said, I'll make him better. And on the way up through the Exbury Way, I got a couple of pheasants and I put them in the knack. And when we got to the hospital, he was on oxygen then. He looked like death warmed up. Well, having been a nurse, I knew this is after the war, actually. But truly, I mean, he was obviously delighted to see us, but I pulled these pheasants out. I said, I've got a present for you, Nibber. What about this? And he laughed, you know what? And from that day on, he got better. Honestly, it was like a dose of medicine to him, you know. He said, you're not changing, are you? Now I said, I've never found my change, you know. I won't swear. But
you can swear if you like.
Yeah, no, but not on that. But honestly, but sadly, you know, he got the pneumonia. If we had a net on a boat and something went wrong and he dived in. It was winter time, cold. And of course, in his poor physical state, it gave him pneumonia quickly. Well, he didn't realise at first, you know how it is, you deal with it and you think it's all right, but he shrugged it off. Of course, it was the worst thing. If he'd have laid up, it would have been all right, but he went to work. And that, but it got him and he just said they had to rush him off to hospital, but his lungs were full up. And of course, they had to operate because he didn't just have pneumonia, he got pleural edema, pleurisy, which is outside the lung, the fluid builds up through the, you know, infection. And of course, they had to cut all that away. It had hardened, and they had to put a irrigation pipe in and flush it out. You know, which was so he was in a bad state. He was fucking lucky he made it. I don't think, you know, but he did, and he got back to living and riding his motorbike. But he was killed on Longford Road, a silly accident, nothing to do with him. He went across. I lent somebody a boat. I could talk about it now, but I couldn't then because my mother. I didn't want her to know. Involved a fucking lunatic of a bloke. I used to lend a boat to, left it down the beach. My brother, I know what he did, he went across the road, he saw it as he came around the corner up there, and he went across the road to look, because he'd done it to me. I was in there with my boat one day, and he came across, and I told him about it, and he came along looking to see, but I was pumping out a steel boat I had with the engine running, it was high tide, but this time when he did it, it was evening time, dusk, and his handlebars on his motorbike caught the one concrete post, and it pulled the throttle out to the end like that, you know, the twist throttle, came out, and of course it was in second gear, which he changed into second gear. It was an aerial 350 under, and truly, it pushed, accelerated forward and threw him into the next post, hit his head here, and in a way, I often think about it, it was a blessing that it happened that way, that he didn't suffer any. Well, it was instantaneous. Yeah, he wouldn't have known, he would have been, he was dead anyway because of cerebral hemorrhage, because it didn't break his neck, but it caused, you know, the damage here caused cerebral hemorrhage there, and he was dead. I arrived, I was half an hour from Forley. I'd taken my motorbike. What was going to happen that night anyway? He was going to run my pal home. I'd left my Sunbeam, I had a shaft drive Sunbeam, and the camshaft chain had gone, or the tensioner, which puts it out of phase, I took it to bits down there, waiting for a part in this pal's workshop in Forley. And he came back with me to Leap, and I don't know how we got back to Leap, somehow or other. Oh, on the bus or something. And yarning, and Henry was going to take him home. Rex said, well, don't worry, Henry. And he was going to give him a crash helmet, because before crash helmets were legal, you know, you didn't wear them. I sometimes wore them, but you didn't, actually. It was a funny thing, we didn't wear them. Used to wear a proper hooded thing, but not a helmet. Anyway, Henry, we were always on about having them, and Rex said, I've got a crash helmet, Henry, you can pick it up, you know, have it. But he, somehow or other, while we yarned, Henry said, well, if you're not going, he said, I've got to go on early in the morning, 6 to 2, you know, on watch up at the gate of the refinery. He said, I've just gone for a ride round. And so he went for a ride round. He had one small stout in Hilltop, at a pal of his, and came on home, dusk, and that was it. I was in Forley, and I was having a beer in the pub there. I'd gone back to Forley with Rex, and had a call to say, had an accident. I got here. We borrowed Rex's wife's car and drove straight here, but he was dead. You know, I was a nurse, and my mother had bandaged him up, we were waiting for the ambulance. But I inspected the bike, and I knew what happened. And the bike had gone ahead, shot forward in second gear, where did it open the throttle, where it pushed the twist grip out to the end of the handlebars. And it's just one of those silly things, and it shot forward, and it was killed instantly. But rather tragic at the time, rather sad.
Can I ask you a bit about...
That's the story of my life.
No, it's not. It's not in the beginning.